Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode number 25. Today we're going to talk about perimeter fencing a little bit. I'm Morgan Hayes. I'm an assistant professor in biosystems and ag engineering at the University of Kentucky. And in my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky with my husband. We farm about 500 acres. We have a commercial cattle and hay operation.
I'm Josh Jackson. I'm an assistant professor in biosystems and agriculture engineering as well. And I farm in Mercer County, where my family raises registering as cattle. And we also focus on hay production.
And let's go ahead and start with what we've been working on the farm in the last week, Josh.
So, you know, I think last one we talked about doing some baling. You know, we finally got our baler fixed, everything. We got some belts replaced, and we went ahead and did some hay. So we put the hay up, and we got about 0.5 bales per acre, but it was already heading out. And, you know, we got the, we do the 5x6 bales, but, you know, not quite what we wanted. Last calf is also on the ground, a little heifer born alive. So we're done with the calving season for the spring. And so now we can just focus on, you know, getting them ready to rebreed here in about 30 days.
Yeah, we had very similar weeks this week. Same thing, we had the open window for hay. I think we both talked about cutting last week, and we both got hay down, although you got a little bit more acreage cut. But also similarly, we also had pretty low productivity on what we did cut. But from a maturity standpoint, this is some of our higher quality hays that we sell at premium prices. So we got to get it up at the right time because we need the nutrition to be right on it. So yep. That's what we did. It also makes it a lot easier to feed to cows in lactation in the wintertime, which is what we both have as fall herds that really need that nutrition. So getting hay up early is important for both of us. So we did get that done. We also had our last calf. I don't think it came, it might have come right when we were actually doing our talk last week. I think my husband found it that day, but I don't think we got to celebrate that fact either. So we're both done with calving season for spring. That means we had 35 cows calve, and we had 36 live calves because we had some twins, some different things happening anyway. So that's good for us. It's always good to have as many calves as you have cows in the herd. That doesn't yep. happen all the time. Actually, it's unusual to have more live calves at the end of the season than there are cows in the herd. Of course, one of them is on a bottle, so that's a whole other discussion.
It's a whole other, but you still, even still with one plus, one additional, you still have the correct amount on the number of cows.
Yeah, we have a calf per cow right now, and we just happen to have one that's on a bottle that is going to cost us a little bit more to get to the end of the season. But that's okay. A little more time, a little more effort. It's crazy. We also, this is a random story for you, but we brought our alpaca over to the house. We've been doing fencing projects on the house. We talked about it last fall a bunch. And one of the reasons we fenced around the house, we have 7 acres there, was specifically because we don't want to mow this summer. And so we brought the alpaca over to eat down the grass. And I thought maybe the alpaca would be concerned about the calf.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. The calf was terrified of the alpaca.
Huh.
We also have a pet steer. It's just a menagerie at the house right now. But the pet steer is in the back. He's a little bit older. He needs a little special treatment. The calf immediately has decided that it wants to nurse the steer, and it does continuously try, which is ironic because it's never actually nursed a cow. So, but it's got a very strong instinct for nursing, and so it wants to nurse Tiny, the steer. But he keeps running into that field. Anytime he sees the alpaca, he goes right through any electrified fences we have to get to his mother, our pet steer, Tiny. So that also was part of our weekend. We got to observe that repeatedly and kept trying to separate them, but it did not work well because the calf needed the support of a larger animal that he was confident was the same type of animal as him that would support him in this vicious alpacas that we have that might take him out. I don't know. I'm pretty sure actually the calf is about the same weight as the alpacas. The irony of this all is not lost on me. And the last.
Just thinking, it's a crazy story. It's just
it was.
It's just, but it's typical for the farm. It is
typical on the farm. I really thought the opposite was going to happen. The calf is a little wild and it plays and bounces around and bucks and does all those things. And I thought perhaps the alpaca would be like, oh, I don't know about this weird small animal that's like wandering around and tries to nurse everything and does strange things. But no, the alpaca were like, we're fine. And the calf was like, I am not fine. Exactly the opposite of what I was expecting to see. The last thing we did is we did vaccinate and fly tag all of our spring group of cows.
Okay.
So actually any of our calves that were over 4 to 5 weeks of age got their first round of vaccines. Cows got their spring vaccines, their boosters, and then also we put the fly tags in. We've had a couple eye issues
already
on that farm, which is not ideal. We don't have huge fly numbers. We are also starting bush hogging, just trying to keep everything clipped down to try and manage that issue. We had a neighbor, and we'll talk about perimeter fencing, but we have a new neighbor on one of the farms. And so he's brought in some new cattle this year. And I don't know if we're just seeing a new strain that we haven't seen that's causing pink eye. It doesn't seem to be particularly bad. Everything that the ones that we have treated, we've put eye patches on and nothing has come off yet eye patch wise, but nothing seems to be getting terrible. It just, there's definitely a little bit of pink eye and we're going to have to get it managed. It's going to be a good reason to do fly tags a little earlier than we were expecting. We expect to do them anyway by mid-May. So in the next week or two, the rest of the group get their fly tags. It's just, we didn't expect to have a couple eye issues that was going to push that process up immediately into last weekend as a highest priority item.
As you're doing the hay and everything else.
Yeah. Fortunately, we had smaller amounts of hay down. We had a discussion about it, but once we, about cutting down a little bit more to possibly bale Friday, Saturday. But once we saw an eye issue and we knew we were going to have to do vaccination work over the weekend, made the decision to
hold off.
And also there was some rain risk. So there was already a rain risk. And then that in combination with that high priority that we had to put on to putting those fly tags in was enough to make the decision.
Okay. You guys going back with the rain risk, you going back in there with a little fertilizer? Or I know we've tossed around some of my family. I don't know if you guys are kind of hemming and hawing on that a little bit or not.
Yeah, we really, I think honestly, if we had the time to get a buggy out before the rain that's coming in this evening, or maybe even if we could get it in by Saturday, our local distributor, the local dealer that does a lot of fertilizer, we typically hire them to pray for us fertilizer rather than using a buggy system. But there was an injury in the family, a pretty significant one, and they're struggling, I think, with workload and family balance. And, you know, we understand that. So we would use a buggy if we were going to do it. But we also have the time constraints of both having some obligations. So whether or not we're able to get in the field is still a little bit up for debate. We may put a little bit on one of the fields that's one of our high producing fields, really push it out of the ground, because that's the one field that we get the highest value on our hays.
Okay.
I don't see us putting a lot of fertilizer onto fields that aren't such a high quality hay, but for those that we can really get value out of, we might consider pushing a little bit of nitrogen just to get it to go a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, we were thinking just 50 pounds in across the board and maybe just a little bit of DAP, a little bit of sprinkle of potash.
No, I don't know. We're still not sure on that. We've pretty much committed to not fertilizing a lot of our fields that we typically fertilize because we do every year, and we're going to take the risk that this year we haven't drawn down the field to create major havoc, and we hold off. Hope that things are a little bit more predictable next year.
Yep.
But I don't know if that's the right decision. I'm not making any recommendations here about fertilizer. At this point, it's very much just a personal decision about how you handle risk as well as cost.
Plus, you know, just for us, sometimes it's like, well, everything just seems to be keep going up. We get it as is this the high point, or is this as it's still going up? So that's kind of been our challenge, just trying to figure out where we are, kind of like what you said, it's a risk either way.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about perimeter fencing. The only reason this is sort of in our topic list right now is because we currently have three neighbors with perimeter fence this summer that we have fencing projects with.
Oh.
We have a large project on the farm that was in my husband's family for a number of years. It's a 3,000-foot fence line that needs to be placed. So both husband and, well, we, my husband and I, and our neighbor have about 1,500 feet of fencing to place. Hopefully that will get done here. We were hoping early May. It looks like it's going to be late May, beginning of June when they get to that project. So that project is a pretty large one, but that one's getting hired out.
Okay.
And then we have some other fences that are existing but are deteriorating and need to be placed with two neighbors on a property that I own that's sort of adjacent to the family land. My husband and I now own it, but I purchased it before we got married. That's how we differentiate the farms. I don't want to seem like we don't farm together, but we have farms that are named my farm and his farm, and it is just because of who owned them before we got married. To make our farming a little bit clearer, we did
not semantical, but yeah, it is a delineation.
It's a delineation we use. It just, I know those are confusing. Similarly, Josh is, we'll talk about his mom's farm and his brothers. Farm and his brother's farms. And it's not that they don't all farm together. I know this too. It's semantics. Just... So
you have one you guys are hiring out done, and another one you guys are building yourself or mm-hmm. building. How do you decide between, is it just with the personal preference of the neighbor? Is it, I know at some point it just needs to be, but how do you decide between hiring it done versus doing it yourself?
Personally, I'd prefer to do most of the fencing myself because I know I get what I want out of my fencing when I do it myself. It also keeps the cost down.
Yep.
It does take the labor cost out of the equation.
Saves you at least, well, it used to be $2 a foot. I don't know what it is anymore. It's
probably still that. The perimeter fence that we're doing with the other neighbor is a little over $4 for a fixed knot high tensile fence. And so I would assume that we have a little over $2 a foot in the material cost, and then we probably have another $2 or a little bit more in labor.
Yep.
Probably $2 in labor plus so much per brace and hanging any gates that go into that fence. Things like that will have a little additional cost on top of it. So I would assume that that is still probably a fair cost, at least in my area. That is not necessarily what I would say the going rate is here in Lexington, and certainly not the going rate for different types of fence. So...
Not if you're doing, yeah, you're doing plank fence, it's a different story.
Yeah, plank fence would be a different story. And even I would say if you were doing a standard woven wire fence, because it has so many more posts in the line and more braces in the line, you'd be looking at least at $250 and maybe closer to $3 a foot. So just a little bit more labor.
So yeah, instead of the traditional woven wire, you could put a post every 10, 12 foot, maybe 15, potentially, depending on right. potentially. And I guess what's your post spacing for this fixed knot high tensile?
We'll have posts every 20 to 25 feet right now. That is the plan on the part that we have hired out. We could go up to about 30 feet safely. I think we could do that on parts of the fence, but just because it's a perimeter and we want visibility and we want some structure to the fence, 20 to 25 feet, but it can move around. If we know we have a rocky outcropping, we can move our posts around flexibly. Benefit there.
And I guess the other, you know, positive benefit is instead of a like for your traditional woven wire, it was a post every or a brace every 300 foot or thereabouts.
330 feet. Yep, that's what's typically in a roll. So
and so with this fixed knot high tensile, you know, how long can you go between the braces? I guess
1320. So you can have two 660 foot rolls. You only get 660 foot rolls if you have your vertical stays on 12s. Otherwise, they're 330s, in which four.
Yep.
Four. Four of those rolls. So that is another major benefit, is there's less bracing involved. To me, that's a huge benefit. Anytime you have to build a brace, there's a lot of cost and time involved in that.
Yep.
And to be completely honest, I'm not always in love with how people build braces. It is critical the braces be 10-foot braces. They don't, not smaller 8-foot braces. No double braces in the design, which... is a good benefit. So that's what we're sort of working with now, is is a fixed knot high tensile for all of these perimeter fences. We use a lot of electrified high tensile fencing. That's just our preference. But we will run electrified wire on the top rather than barbed wire. So the original cost included the bid for the other fence, included barbed wire on the top, but we will run an electrified wire on the top of ours. Okay. Because we already run electric on our whole farm anyway. It's not like we're increasing our work by including electric there. We can easily jump electric from other fences to continuously run it along the top. And I don't think that's going to create any problems with wear and tear on that fence, because it will keep the cattle off of it the same way a barbed wire would.
Y'all using, are you using high tensile as well for that electrified wire?
Yes, we will. We'll use a 12 and a half gauge.
So that's less than a cent or two per foot.
Yeah, it used to be less than a cent. Now it's like 2 cents per foot, but certainly cheap enough to do. And the other benefit is that we then have an electric wire wherever we need it if we do want to run any interior temporary fencing. So not only can we split it between our interior fences that are electrified, but if we wanted to split off of an exterior fence, we will now have a wire there to do that.
Very nice.
So should work well.
Yeah, I know. And something else I've, you know, often think about is like when you're redoing some of these perimeter fences, that they've been there forever and a day. They oftentimes have trees and I guess, do you guys go ahead and bulldoze that out? I know for me, it's an easy cost to justify because it'll be about, depending on how bad it is, maybe $2 a foot, or it used to be. Mm-hmm. It's probably gone up now as well. But I guess, do you guys leave some of the posts? Do you leave some of the trees? Do you take them all out? What's your philosophy?
So in this major fence line that we're doing, we are keeping any trees that are straight and higher quality woods. We're removing any locusts. We're removing anything that's leaning. We're removing anything that we think could fall on the fence in the near future.
Any ash trees?
Ash trees would definitely be gone. We've actually cleared out a lot of our ash trees already, but our fields actually have pretty decent tree stands within them. We've actively worked at maintaining trees on the farm. Our neighbor's farm is not that way. It's been grazed continuously for the most part. It hasn't had a good rotation, which is really tough on trees. So for anyone that doesn't know, what ends up happening is the cows congregate under those trees. They rub on the tree. They defecate under the tree. They kill the roots of the tree. They basically smother the tree by living under them. And then eventually the trees die. And it's very hard to start new trees under continuous grazing plans because they just don't hold up under the pressure of all those animals in the field. And the animals like to eat the leaves. They like to eat the tree. You can even give them good grass and they don't care. They still think the tree is a tastier option. Sometimes I'm not sure why. Someone will tell me that I'm wrong, but they definitely eat the trees.
Eat the trees. Yes, I've seen it. I can testify they eat the trees.
They do. They eat a lot of strange things. I think just because they're bored and it's interesting. But I will say that because that neighbor doesn't have a lot of trees, it's very critical for them that we don't remove all the trees. So they've actually agreed to do the bulldozing work, clean the fence line out, and they're going to pay for that in order to ensure that they can keep the quality trees that they need, because they need the trees for the shade.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, we have a new neighbor that wants to build a fence with us, and that is a good neighbor relationship that we want to maintain. So we are happy to keep any trees. Realistically, the majority of them are actually on our side of the fence because we rotate and the trees live on our side of the fence. So we have the option a little bit of how many trees actually stay, but we're willing to work with them to keep as many trees as we can in that fence line. I like trees in general. I think they're good. They keep wind down. They give protection for the animals in the wintertime. There's a lot of reasons to like having trees, so I have no problem keeping some trees in that fence line, but there's certainly crap in that fence line that needs to come out, and it will. The bush honeysuckles will get pulled out, as well as any trees that are dead, dying, have very strange limbs on them. We'll at least limb the trees. We do have a pole saw, so we can be pretty aggressive on limbing trees that we think have problems.
Yep.
And, you know, since they have a larger bulldozer that they're running, and they're going to do the majority of the work, we're going to do our part to make sure that we can make that an easy process. I will say the one trick is that when you fence, you do have to keep your animals off of the fence. So we'll be using a lot of temporary fencing on both sides. to manage that process. And that's a big fence line. For some people, you work in small sections to try and not have to manage this much. But this essentially is almost all of our pastures are in contact with this fence line, and all of his cattle are also in contact with this fence line. So we will have, I would assume we will have to take a good look at calves a couple weeks out once we get a new fence up and maybe resort some calves on both sides of the fence. But it's still worth it, I think.
Yeah, just put up a temporary like 2-strand or...
Yep, we have some step-ins, and we also have some pigtail. We, depending on the field, in some fields we'll use just the pigtail and let the calves roam as they may. But in the other fields, we'll have to do step-ins with two wire on them to try and keep them back a little bit more aggressively. And we'll figure it out.
I mean, they'll typically go back to mom.
Calves, the calves are excellent about going, if they go under a temporary fence, making it back under it. So I don't anticipate a lot of problems with that, but that is probably one thing we need to be cognizant of. Since both of us have spring calving herds and we have young calves on the ground at the same time that we're good, good in quotes, it's not in great shape currently, but it's functional at least somewhat right now. So
I know, for us, we had some fence line work done. And so the one neighbor had a little forest there, but we still look out probably about 10, 15 on some parts where we saw some leaning trees, 30 foot.
Yep.
I made a 30-foot swath through this forest just so it's like whatever trees do fall, they're going to fall far enough away to not hit the fence.
Yeah, and we don't have such a heavy tree line there that we should have huge issues. We do have some trees that need to come down. We both are aware of it. The neighbor's also aware of it and happy to do that. So he's pulling out a bunch of those. Because they sit up onto our pastures, we've allowed trees sort of in fence lines and along creeks and things like that to develop. But we don't have a huge number of trees that are way back from the fence. So there's not a lot of discussion about trees that are further back. There are a few that we have intentionally taken down in the last couple of years, like you said, ash trees, things like that, that we knew were dead or dying that we just dropped a year or two ago. Just to clear out some of that material. We lived in a house that had a wood stove. So we had a good reason to utilize some of that wood material. Yep. But hopefully we don't have to take down a lot of good trees at this point.
Right. And it's, using some of those ashes. I'm the only one of my family who doesn't burn wood. And I keep telling them, it's like, hey, propane's nice. Then price of everything went up, so I'm not sure I'm going to say that this winter, though. I'm not sure I'm going to say
this winter. They might be like, isn't that wood stove something you should be thinking about, Josh?
So it might be a completely different story.
There's benefits to both. We still have a fireplace with an insert that'll blow, and we actually gain a lot of our heat from that in the winter time. But we aren't fully heating with wood at this point, and it's very obvious that the use of wood that we have right now is significantly less than it was when we stove it.
And we get all our ash trees that we can. We have some fence lines with the neighbor. Ours is decently maintained, theirs is moderately maintained, but we still have, they have a fair number of ash trees on their side. I have some trees on my side that go down, and so we've actually ran we run a temporary fence, single wire pigtail post, just inside of that one. Just as it's not the highest quality fence, and we know there's going to be issues, so we go ahead and run probably about 10 foot off the fence line. It's not something that's ideal, and we typically take it up twice a year to mow.
Yeah, we have something very similar. We actually have a fence line that we do the same thing with, not on this farm, but on a rented farm. It just keeps animals out of areas that are sort of higher risk and areas where you can't manage the fence as well. And it is what it is. It's a lot of maintenance to have that, but it also resolves a lot of issues with losing cows into the woods or calves into the woods, which we have done before as well. So that is always an option. I don't like doing that too much because I think sometimes you end up losing acres over years if you're not careful about mowing. But I also recognize that when we have fences that are not in appropriate shape, that we have to do things just make our lives and our sanity possible.
Yeah, and it's not, I'm just trying to avoid the 12 a.m. phone calls.
I know. They do exist. I know. So let's let's finish up today with maybe just a little bit about what we're planning to do next week on the farm. It looks like we're going to get some rain this week. It's not going to be a hay week. What's on the agenda this week?
You know, we still got our big manure spreader, trying to get that finished up. Got some new flighting in, so probably get that new flighting put on, and then pretty much ready to rock and roll. Try to spread some of our nutrients that way. And then doing a little bit of like just maintenance. So we did have a couple hydraulic hoses, not essential. So just for the pickup, the down stroke for the pickup for our hay baler, that one went, that blew out, and another hose on our tractor blew. So a couple little things going over and making sure we mind all our P's and Q's and everything's ready to run. So just equipment maintenance and, you know, just getting ready for, we got to put fly, as you were talking about earlier, fly tags.
Yep, we've got a few more animals, not on our spring herd, some of our fall animals. That's going to be a target. It looks like it's going to be a cold snap's going to come through. A cold snap, I put that in quotes as well, coming through maybe Sunday, Monday. And so if we can get through without a lot of rainfall, a day that's 70 degrees would be much more amenable to working some cattle. So hopefully we can get some tags and ears at the end of this weekend or beginning of next week. Also, we have on the agenda bush hogging. I said before, we're clipping pastures. We're trying to clip some of them tall because we still have a good amount of grass in them. But we certainly have animals and we cannot have eye issues. It's a non-negotiable. It's just a huge problem if we have it. So we'll clip anything that's headed out, try and get anything that looks like it might be a problematic field under control. So fly tags, bush hogging, and then some maintenance as well, just generally getting things prepped. We have a couple hay binds that we use parts that we have been tearing apart just to put all the parts sort of together that are valuable, and then also so we can scrap the rest of it in case we can get it out while metal prices are high. This is a good time to scrap some of that scrap metal. So that's our goal, is just to just general maintenance and getting things cleaned up, and not farming related, but we're building a deck right now, so that seems to